Hey, Packet Pushers listeners, Ethan here. Just a heads up, for the last three or so minutes of this show, we lost the headset audio feed and recovered the remaining audio as best we could using a backup mic. Thanks for listening, and enjoy.
Welcome to Packet Pushers and the Priority Queue, the special features feed where the Packet Pushers take our hardest of hardcore industry event coverage, make it the nichest of niche and the most specific of special content, and create a whole new category of networking podcasts, the Priority Queue. Let's face it, too much networking still isn't enough. And in this show today, we are going to be talking to Rick Pruse from Cisco about the new 1PK strategy, which is part of Cisco's SDN portfolio, filing cabinet, potpourri of technologies which comes together to create a lovely odour of software-defined networking arising from the marvellous future that Cisco's laid out for us here at Cisco Live. So, Rick, thank you for joining us today. Tell people a little bit about what you do.
I'm a software architect with Cisco in the Network Operating Systems Division. I have been working on creating a series of APIs for the network OSes. The idea is to give a consistent set of network APIs across all three operating systems, and accompanying it, we're putting out an SDK which allows people to develop applications. The applications can be deployed into containers in the network or to blades in the network or just run on servers with or endpoints with the network. We're opening up APIs at every level inside the operating system. We're letting you peer up with the routing layer, with the control planes. We're letting you set policies like QoS and ACLs. We're letting you introspect the router, look at its memory, look at its versions, look at its interfaces, all dynamically via programmatic APIs, not, all these things you could do in the past via SNMP or CLI and all the rest of it. The big difference now is we're giving a strong programmatic access to the device, and we're implementing the actual libraries and files that people can use directly, so you don't have to go write another layer on top of this because it's written on some web services thing or something like that. It's you'll directly have a Java or a C library, and you can use those to do everything from the top of the control plane, the management planes, all the way down to looking at what the optical behavior is or the OAM behavior in.
So, I mean, the idea here is not just the OpenFlow paradigm where it's a controller pushing flow table instructions, that kind of a thing, down to the switches. This is bidirectional, and it encompasses a lot more layers of what networking really is.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea is to open up everything that we use to build our applications and our network operating systems to applications, to let people innovate with the software that we've developed over the years.
Yeah, so we talked over the last couple of days, we talked about 1PK and how it goes together, and I think one of the biggest messages I got from the early discussion we had with you was how 1PK is going to be API access into iOS. So it has only works with the modular iOSs is the first thing that people should think of. Doesn't work with classic iOS per se because it's not modular.
The 1PK APIs do work with classic. You just can't have containers on classic routers. So classic routers won't have containers. The new ones with Linux bases can have containers, and into those containers you can deploy applications. But the APIs will actually work with classic. So on classic you can still deploy on a blade, or you can still run an application from an end host or a server.
Right. So there's three parts to it then. There's the APIs, which are then into the iOS. Mm-hmm. The second part is that you can have a container, and then the container can exist is kind of like an application space or an executable space.
Yes.
If I try and turn it into language, it's a bit more, at least in my mind anyway. So a container can be a CPU capacity inside a router that certain models allow. Mm-hmm. So things like the iOS XR, the ASR 9000s, 1000s,
right.
Certain of the 3700s. And the NXOS, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
Right. So they'll carve out a piece of CPU and memory chunk, and you can actually run apps directly in there that poll the APIs underlying that.
Correct.
Right. Or you can have an external server running an app, So there was some discussion where we talked about using a Nexus 1010 server to actually run containers to poll apps inside of over the APIs.
Right, and we're going to see that. You will see that people will use layers. You know, especially in large networks, you'll want to do sub-aggregation, as we've always done with route reflectors and that sort of thing. The same sort of hierarchies will exist, I believe, in the apps. I mean, yep. We don't really know at this stage. I mean, we're really at the infancy of all of this.
Yeah,
it's really just started. But we can look at the history of networking and say, okay, how did networking? You can think of each of the control planes, basically, each of the routing protocols as an application, a control plane application. And how did those mature over time? What sort of patterns did they take? And I expect to see very similar patterns taken with other innovations in the application space.
Yeah, that's right. And then the final part is that you can have applications on an external server. So I actually see for most people that the early stage of your use of these APIs would be to write your own little custom scripts that would exist on a Linux server that would push into the APIs that you've exposed via the 1PK program. And right. Then people would use those, iterate over those to say, wow, there's something in there. I can do these things. I can see something. I can poll the number of VLANs that are in here. I can configure the VLANs that are in that device and say, you know, or add a VLAN to an interface. And they can say, wow, I can see what I can do with that. Now I need to take that to the next step, and then I'll containerize that and then put that into the Cisco ecosystem.
And with the SDK, we're making available a series of small open source apps that we are hoping are small enough to be understandable, easy to grok, and that you can put together, assemble together. I mean, a big struggle for us in the development team is networking is a complex space. Before we even started, you know, adding APIs to it, how do you add APIs that are usable, you know, that people can actually get to, and so on? So that's one of the challenges we've wrestled with.
There's no history here.
That's right.
There's no history.
This is day zero of a new sort of industry.
Yeah. Exactly.
How many APIs? I think you said a pretty large number. What was the number of APIs you guys are targeting at release?
Well, it's hard to say the number of APIs, but I'll say roughly, at release, we wanted to have a representative bit of all of the pieces of the stack. So we really wanted to have, you know, something that was, you know, representative of each major area of networking, so that you could write that control plane app, so that you could write that data path app. That's what we really try to hit. The actual numbers of APIs varies between Java and C, and I think it's not going to be at all static. We are continually adding to the list. So, you know, if I give a number now, it's going to be wrong by, you know, the end of the week. There is certainly a lot of APIs here. The base APIs are actually very simple. We've spent the time to try and make the core of the system actually quite simple and easy to use. You can imagine internally our APIs are, you know, they're evolved over time and history, and so they're actually very you know, very complex, very rich. And so we've taken the time to simplify those down to say, okay, what's the core of what we're trying to achieve here? Let's bring it down to just that, and not expose every nerd knob, not expose you know every little piece of thing that's happened over history, but actually just cut down to the core, make the core functionality available. That does give us the problem that we're going to be wrong in many places. We're going to miss this critical feature over here or something like that. So we're going to have to evolve these APIs quite quickly.
Why don't you talk about me? I remember seeing a slide here when we were talking about this that had something like seven major categories of APIs and some of the functions that were exposed.
Yes.
Just to give listeners an idea of what they'll be able to touch, can you talk through that?
Yes, certainly. So the first one that most people are surprised that we opened up is the data path. And, I mean, we've opened what I think of as, you know, the traditional old Cisco slow path, where you can take a packet up from the data path over Cisco IPC mechanism, so really, you know, get it up there quickly, and you get the metadata with it, so, you know, MAC address and that sort of stuff, you know, more than just the physical packet, what interface it came in, other information as well. You can get that up out of the forwarding path, get it up to the application, do some stuff with the application, and then put it down at various points in the forwarding path, either before routing or even after routing. So you can make the routing decision on the packet and decide which interface you want to put it out. And in fact, that's one way of doing OpenFlow is to do cut through.
You punt everything to a processor. But that's a finite resource. The processor is limited. If you could burn up too much processor, the router starts to degrade.
But it's great to be able to do the experiments now on the router, just to put an app there, and for many applications, especially on some of the more powerful routers, one thinks of the ASR 1002X. I mean, that's got a serious amount of Intel grunt on it now. The new one has got 32 gigs of memory, so it's got a ton of space, a ton of CPU. Okay, you can actually do quite a bit of forwarding with it. So for those type of boxes, you could start to see people doing experimental real forwarding features. Then we're exposing the policy stuff. So in policy, we've got ACLs, QoS, policy routing, those, all the classic what do I do to a flow type policies. And then we're exposing routing. We're exposing routing in a nice way. We allow you to basically act as a peer routing protocol. So you can read the RIB. You can register for events on specific routes if something happens, but you can also add routes in there, and they appear in the routing tables, A routes, application routes, you can even redistribute those. So you could literally write a new routing protocol. Now I don't expect people to really want to much do routing protocols, but just in this last week, I mean, speaking to customers, people have come up with a lot of really, wow, that's an interesting use case for the routing stuff.
It's really powerful, because even if all you're doing is injecting a route because of some very complex use condition, something you've tested on the network that says, okay, based on this set of complex criteria, I want to inject a route that sends my traffic here. That's a very simple thing that people can latch onto and really understand, and the API gives you some flexibility to do things beyond what you might be able to do with IPSLA, let's say, or EEM.
Yes. So the other service set that we're making available is the Element, which is everything about the router, its interfaces, its memory, versions, all that sort of stuff. We're letting you set interfaces, interface features, the core sort of objects that you think of in networking are available through that. We've also taken a little bit of time to make sure that the applications can actually look and feel like a native application. So we've given applications the ability to extend CLI. It'll be clearly visible that it's application CLI, but you can add, your own show commands. You can add your own configuration for an application, so that it'll be part of the CLI ecosystem. And then we've exposing a set of APIs we call the Discovery APIs, which they expose the big tables that we've got inside the router about the network. So we let you have a look at what the L3 topology is. We let you look at what the L2 CDP topology is. And we are presenting them as sort of, these are topologies that are available from the device. So I think that's roughly covers them. And there's a couple more to do with actually running applications as well, debugging them and securing them and so on.
And that's a big part of what we also talked about, is the APIs have security models that are practical and workable. I don't think we should need to drill into them here, but you've got security models attached to both the containers and the APIs themselves that make sense, or certainly what we talked about a couple of days ago.
Yes, I think we've got a good starting set of security. I mean, so obviously it's a big thing on our minds. We try to give very good security undertakings from the operating system, and we wanted to give a level of security that we felt comfortable with. And if there's anything that wakes a developer up at 2 a.m. at Cisco, it's security problems, right? So, don't do things that wake you up at 2 a.m.
Okay, I want to come around on one question. So one of the things that people are going to ask about the 1PK program is it OpenFlow? So explain how 1PK and the term OpenFlow APIs go together.
We are implementing OpenFlow on top of 1PK. So we've certainly got the capabilities of some of OpenFlow, insofar as it's possible from the platforms. But at 1PK, it's not at all OpenFlow. OpenFlow is a protocol that sets a very small piece of of what we believe the overall things that you can do with programmability is. OpenFlow lets you, you know, control a flow. We want to open up, you know, the rest of the things that networks do.
So, yeah. So, OpenFlow just sets an entry into the fib.
Right.
And it says this 12-tuple, and when I say 12-tuple, I mean source IP, destination IP, source MAC, destination MAC, and a whole bunch of other tags inside of a header, you send it out this port.
That's port, right.
Right. That's it. There's a few more actions in some of the later versions of OpenFlow, et cetera, but let's disregard those for the purpose of this. What you're saying is that's just one very small element of possible API functionality that you could expose. You're also saying we'll let you put an application route into the RIB,
right?
Which then gets loaded into the fib. And that has the same impact, but you might then want to say, well, I want to inject that application route into OSPF so that it distributes right across my entire network. So then I don't actually have to, at an API level, programmatically add a flow to every single route across the network.
Right.
And that's a different approach to solving the same problem in a way.
In a way, but also we believe some functionality, you know, a lot of the value add that you see in networks like the IPSLA is very difficult to envisage in an open flow system, where you're delegating a task down to a control plane that is local and is monitoring a specific condition and then is able to react. So those additional layers of that's a classic high level service, which in the end, yes, of course, it does, you know, use the same fib as everything else, but there's another layer of monitoring and so on that's happening inside the routers there. So that said, I mean, I do think that the open flow, the ONF, you know, are working on new releases and you know, Cisco certainly monitoring and playing a big role where we can there.
Well, that was when you, Greg asked what the difference between OpenFlow is and, you know, the Cisco's overall model. And that's, I was kind of asking about the number of APIs because I think that highlights just how complex networking is and how just programming fib entries is a very small portion of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that by opening up more APIs and more of the functionality that exists in existing routers, we're going to allow some of the things that I found exciting about the OpenFlow, the idea that, you know, that applications are going to change the way networks work, but without having to reset the whole of networking, without having to say, okay, you know, we're not going to use BGP or any of those things to do the forwarding. We're going to, you know, invent some new controller way of doing things. So instead of having to do that, we can now take an existing network and say, okay, you know, I found this great use case for doing something with my network, and I can hook up that application to my existing network, and that I think this SDN for me is a great exciting phase of networking, because now we're going to get some innovation where applications are able to directly use the features and the functions that exist today.
So from a practical standpoint, you mentioned C and Java as languages and tools that folks can use to access the 1PK APIs.
That's right.
Which two, a lot of the folks that would listen to this show are not going to be accessible tools because they're not C programmers, they're not really familiar with Java, so it's going to be a little out of their reach. So what other tools that maybe network engineers are specifically familiar with might we see coming down the road?
Well, we're certainly looking quite strongly at Python at the moment, and you know, we're continually taking feedback about which languages we should add next. We've built this on an infrastructure that allows us to quite with relatively low cost turn up additional languages, and so, you know, as we get feedback from the community, you know, this is right at the outset. We've certainly going to take that on board and bring additional ones out.
So if people want a particular language, they should get a hold of their account manager and say, I want a Tickle interface, you know, or a I need to see basic.
We've had some feedback that Tickle's aged not so gracefully, so I doubt it'll be Tickle, but yes, absolutely.
I've been a bit lighthearted, but I mean, the traditional language of networking has been Perl. And certainly, in my experience, most of us using Perl. But I think we had this discussion previously, was if I'd be happy to get some guidance from people like yourself that if Ruby is the right language, or Python, or, you know, Haskell, or, you know, whatever it is, if that's the right language, a better language, why not give us some guidance and say we should be reconsidering, you know, 10 years of history and saying we need to move on into the modern era. If Perl's not the future, then let's have a discussion about Perl not being the future.
Well, you know, I think that picking a side in the language wars is is always dangerous ground. But
it's not just a horse race; it's a religious argument.
That's right. So there is ground I tread very carefully on. But certainly, you know, we do want to do more. We chose these two because we write in C, and so we really want to use this ourselves. So we've got, you know, thousands of developers who have, you know that and know it well, and write networking applications, we think, reasonably well in it. So that's certainly the reason for the C. And then the Java is looking at our enterprise customer base. We got a lot of feedback from there that was what they're mainly using.
Enterprise or cloud?
Enterprise.
So
I think you're right. The cloud space is definitely either Python and the massively scalable data centers, or Heroku, and these guys are all platform as a service type stuff is all Ruby. So those are the languages we see at the cloud edge. And it's an interesting it's interesting to see. To see again, the network underlies all these communities, and each of these communities has their own traditions, and so it's going to be interesting not just from a language perspective, but also from an API perspective. And this is something I guess we're only at the start of, but different languages have different styles of API, and those different communities also have different styles of APIs. And this is where there's going to be, you know, maybe in 2 years' time, we're sitting here and we're having a discussion about the styles of the APIs that's sitting, you know, underneath cloud and underneath enterprise.
A couple of questions is, obviously APIs are new to the environment and we're seeing a lot more interest. You know, obviously 1PK is an API and it's not something that network engineers have seen a lot of. So what do you think, now that Cisco's got some APIs, what does it look like in context of the entire networking industry?
Well, I think this is, you know, the dawn of us having APIs. A number of vendors have brought APIs out, and I think we're all at the infancy of this. And I think the industry will mature over the next couple of years with APIs. I think if we look back at this day, you know, in a couple of years' time, we'll be able to, you know, laugh a little probably at the mistakes we've made and so on. You know, I hope some of this survives. We're obviously, you know, very happy with what we've got in place here. You know, I also know that, you know, this is, you know, version 0.6.
I'm sort of minded of SNMP version 1, sort of like back in the late 90s. And then it became 2. And then 2 became proprietary as well as public, you know, MIBs and OIDs. And we learned so much from that whole process as times went on.
Yeah, I think we can expect to see a similar series of evolution. It's gonna evolve along those sort of lines.
Sure.
And it's really hard to predict from what that's actually going to look like.
Sure. And then final question was Cisco and open source. There's a lot of open source going on here. So does that mean Cisco is going to release a lot of its code into open source?
Yes, Cisco's looking at certainly in the SDK. We're hoping that we're bringing out a whole bunch of code, but also you know, Cisco's long contributed to industry by opening standards, and we're now going to start contributing as well in open source, not just by coming to the standards forum, but also by putting some code out there and showing people what the code looks like. So we're hoping to do more of that and contribute more of that to the overall industry. And I also, you know, urge, you know, not just the other vendors, but also, you know, everybody in the industry, we should start to have a collective set of wisdom. The set of tools around Linux, you know, Alice, Greenbook tools, so on, are a tremendous asset and wealth to the world. And I would love to see that sort of evolution happening around the industry as well.
Yeah. And we've talked before about that and talked about finding ways for individuals to write to these APIs as well as the big companies. So there's two sides to the APIs. There's people like me.
It's not just our APIs as well. I think that they should also be this not just about the proprietary APIs, but also about collective, shared, you know, open software.
Okay. Well, Rick, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
It's been a great pleasure.
If anybody wants to get a hold of, get more information around the 1PK, I'll try and get some links into the show notes and you can get more information. But otherwise, that is it for the show. Thanks very much to Ethan Banks for joining us, of course, and sure. Derek Winkworth for your valuable contributions.
We'll have very little.
I'm always worried when you're quiet. I think you're going to come and get after me in a minute. But thanks for listening to Packet Pushers Priority Queue. As always, check out the website for more show notes and links to more topics. There's a lot more content, so go and look around and find out more about us. You can always follow the podcast on Twitter as @PacketPushers and other fine social media locations. Tune in for more Priority Queue podcasts as they are released. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.